Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle.
Hello, I'm John Beckner, Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for the National Community Pharmacists Association. And I'd like to welcome you to the Move the Needle Immunization Podcast. Typically, I've got my good friend and running mate, Ed Cohen, with me, but he's not able to join me today. We'll miss you, Ed, but luckily, I've got a very distinguished guest with me to carry on the conversation. So it's my honor and privilege to introduce Bruce Berger. Bruce is president of Berger Consulting, LLC, and emeritus professor at Auburn University. He's developed CMMIT, Comprehensive Motivational Interviewing Training for Healthcare Providers. He's taught motivational interviewing in healthcare and methods for improving treatment adherence for over 30 years. His research interests include health behavior change, improving treatment adherence, and leadership. He's written 3 books, written or presented over 900 papers or seminars on these topics. He's the recipient of numerous awards, including the Lyman Award and the First American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy Award of Excellence for his research. Bruce is the 2007-2009 winner of the APHA Wiederholt Prize for Best Research Publication in the Social, Behavioral, and Administrative Sciences in Pharmacy in the Journal of APHA. First study focused on the impact of motivational interviewing. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Bruce is the 2009 recipient of the American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy Robert Chalmers Distinguished Pharmacy Educator Award. Bruce is the author of the book, Motivational Interviewing for Healthcare Professionals, A Sensible Approach, and the 8-hour accredited Motivational Interviewing e-learning program for healthcare professionals, of which my organization, NCPA, has been involved. Bruce, it's great to have you. You may not remember, but we go way back. First time I met you was in the mid-90s. I was working for UCrop Supermarkets. Wow. And you were one of the faculty for the Shine Voice of Pharmacy program.
Wow. We're almost older than dirt.
Exactly. That's pretty scary, but it's
wonderful
good to
be here.
Good to get reconnected with you again. So first thing I'd like to explore with you is, how did you get interested in motivational interviewing? And maybe you could share with us why it's so important to what pharmacists do.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for having me. And second of all, I wanted to say, I hope some of you that are listening will come up and say hi at the annual meeting, NCPA annual meeting. I'll be there presenting. But you may not know this, but I actually started off doing deliveries and actually a short order cook at an independent community pharmacy. And that's what really stimulated my desire to go back to school and get a degree in pharmacy. After I got my degree and started working for a period of time, I was working with another pharmacist, and I'm proud of this. I'm not meaning to sound like I'm bragging, but the patients started wanting to know when Bruce would be there. And that really irritated her, to be honest. And what it was is, and John, you'll know what this is. I kept a tickler card system. I wrote down little things about patients. This is before computers. I wrote down things on those cards about my patients. So I knew when Mrs. Jones came in to ask, how Bill was doing, because he had surgery. And I started noticing how much that relationship entered into whether or not the patient, really listened and really wanted to know more about their medication and how it worked and how important it was and on, right? And I decided to go back to school to actually study health psychology and health communication to better understand, you know, what is it about that I was doing that was working, and also what is it that might get in the way. And after I got out of graduate school, I was very fortunate to have really outstanding graduate students, one in particular named Karen Hudman. Got her master's under me, and then we sent her off to Texas, to Houston, to get her PhD in public health. She came upon a guy that that knew about motivational interviewing, and Karen basically said, "You got to look this stuff up." And I did. And once I looked it up, that was it. I had found my calling. Motivational interviewing was developed by two clinical psychologists as a new way to talk with patients who are addicted to substances. And what kind of amazes me, John, is here we've been talking about the substance abuse problem that we're having, you know, in the United States. And I never hear anybody talk about motivational interviewing. And yet it's the most effective intervention ever. And it's, you know, it's evidence-based. It has the lowest rate of relapse of any intervention. And I thought to myself, my gosh, if those guys, those clinical psychologists could have this impact on people abusing substances, couldn't we use some of this kind of approach to talk to patients about chronic illness? You know, because that seems far less daunting to me than trying to help people who are addicted to substances. And I actually brought it into healthcare over 35 years ago. And what it is, and I'm oversimplifying.
That's okay.
It's a set of skills and a way of being with patient. And it was called client-centered 40 years ago. And now we're talking about patient-centered, right?
Right.
So it's a way of being with patients and a set of skills that says, look, I want to help. I want to understand what's keeping you from taking this medicine, losing weight, quitting smoking. It is designed to help patients who are ambivalent or resistant to change. So whether it's about, I'm not sure I want to take this medicine, I don't know that I want to get vaccinated, I don't know that I want to lose weight, I've tried losing weight before and I gain it back. That's who it's designed for. All those patients who are ambivalent or resistant to change. And it basically says to the patient, I want to help. I want to explore this with you. But I also know that ultimately you decide. You know, you have to decide, do you want to treat your diabetes? Do you want to treat your blood pressure? We kind of have it backwards in healthcare, John, in that we think we're driving the bus and the patient's a passenger. The reality is the patient's always been driving the bus. What we're trying to do is influence the route.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, and this is just absolutely fascinating to me, but it, you know, as a patient, I really think that a lot of people want help. They want to get help, but they also at the same time want to stay in control.
Sure. Well, and you know what the fact of the matter is? They are in control. We don't manage illness. Patients manage illness. You know, I have high cholesterol. I remember my primary care physician, when he told me my numbers, when he said, you got high cholesterol, he says, you know, we got to put you on a statin and, you know, we got to get some exercise. I love the "we got it," right? And I looked at him and I said, okay, what time are you going to meet me at the gym, since we're going to do this? And my point was, and I wasn't trying to be a smart aleck, first of all, I decided I didn't want to take a statin. This is what it means to be patient-centered, to offer patients, here are the kinds of things that you can do to lower your cholesterol. Here's why lowering your cholesterol is important. Which of these would you like to do? The patient might say none of them. And then we got to explore that. I told them I didn't want to take a statin. I said, I'd rather work on changes in diet and exercise. And that's what I've done. I've never taken a statin and I've controlled my cholesterol. But the point is, he immediately said, you got to do this. And For one, this is a matter of choice. First of all, I've got to understand why lowering cholesterol is important, especially since I felt okay, right? And second of all, I've got to know what choices do I have and how are they important? And then the healthcare professional really has to guide me toward, do I want to make these decisions? It's my decision. It's my cholesterol. I'm the one who makes the decision to manage it. Can the healthcare professional influence that decision? Absolutely. Negatively and positively.
So it can actually, obviously it's helping patients, but, based upon, what you're talking about, it can actually help protect. So Bruce, that's a great explanation. And you touched on a couple of things. You touched upon, how you can apply motivational interviewing to substance abuse. You touched on the adherence issue, which is obviously always going to be out there. So let's put it in the context of immunizations. We've been, pharmacists have done a great job during the pandemic of basically immunizing America. But that having been said, there's still a fair amount of vaccine hesitancy out there. And I think, that term's evolved from vaccine hesitancy to vaccine confidence. And now you hear about vaccine fatigue on the part of both patients and pharmacists. So help me understand how motivational interviewing can help with regard to that.
Let me give you two quick examples, okay? Toward the beginning, when the vaccines first came out, I actually have a niece who is a nurse. She's an ER nurse. She calls me up and she said, Uncle Bruce, I am really worried. I don't want to get COVID, but I'm worried about these vaccines, all right? So my approach to motivational interviewing is called a sense-making approach, because we don't use any of the acronyms that were originally developed. We are looking for how is the patient making sense of what is happening to them, all right? And we've learned that people who are ambivalent or resistant, whether they're ambivalent or resistant about a vaccine, a medication, losing weight, their sense-making is contaminated either by inaccurate or misinformation. So my job is to listen for what's either missing or inaccurate, and in a caring and loving way, get that corrected.
And just not to interrupt you real quick, but I think you used a word that I think is very important to this, and that's listen, correct?
Absolutely. And by the way, to listen means to hear without judgment. So if I am listening truly, I am not thinking to myself, well, that's misinformation. They don't know what they're talking about. What I'm thinking is, okay, they've got some misinformation. That misinformation is keeping them from wanting to use this medication or take this vaccine. I've got to let them know I get why they're worried. And then I've got to ask them, would they be willing to let me tell them a few things and then tell me what they think? So my niece said, I'm worried about these vaccines. They came out really fast. So from a sense-making perspective, I said, so it sounds like, and it's just got it, this is the whole part about the spirit of MI. You've got to be sincere. I said, it sounds like you're worried about, are these vaccines safe to use because they came out so fast? And she said, exactly. Now, one of the reasons I reflect back what she's telling me is it gives her the opportunity to confirm it or say, no, it's not that, it's this. It's the old, if you get on a road and you think you're on the right road and you don't give the patient to say that's the wrong road, off you go and you're wasting everybody's time. So she said, exactly. That tells me I got it. That's what her concern is. So what's missing for her in this case is her understanding about mRNA vaccines. So I said to her, that makes sense. You don't want to take something if you're not sure it will hurt you, even though you're worried about COVID. And she said, exactly, again. She knows I'm on her side now, right? So I then said, you know, would you like to talk about this some more? And she said, yes. And I said, okay, you know, I want to share some information with you, and then I want you to tell me what you think. And she said, fair enough. I said, with the understanding that ultimately it's your decision whether you want to use the vaccine or not. Now, do you hear how conversational this is? And John, I would have had the same conversation if this was a patient and not my niece.
Yeah, and I was, you just answered the question I was going to ask you, because motivational interviewing, when you're talking about whether it's substance abuse or adherence, is a little bit different than vaccine hesitancy, because with vaccine hesitancy, you have the fear factor. You really don't have a fear factor with adherence. So you've got to overcome that.
Actually, I had a patient not too long ago that had a new prescription for her diabetes, and she said, I don't know if I want to take this. And I said, tell me more about that. She said, well, I took some medicine last month for a bacterial infection, and I ended up in the hospital. And she said, with a horrible rash and couldn't breathe. Well, she had an anaphylactic reaction. So I said to her, okay, so because of what happened to you last month, you don't want that to happen again with this medication. And she said, absolutely. And I said, can we talk about that? Because you raise a legitimate concern. Mm-hmm. My job now is to hear that her sense is, I don't want that to happen to me again. I've got to be able to show her how this medication is not going to do the same thing that last one did. See what I'm saying?
I do.
So it doesn't, you know, you have to, whether it's with a vaccine, whether it's with losing weight or a medication, it's meeting the patient exactly where they are and honoring it first.
So how do you deal with a patient who's not necessarily scared about getting the vaccine, but they're really just, they're tired of hearing about vaccines. They've gotten the primary series of COVID vaccine. They've gotten mm-hmm. boosted. Now it's time to get the seasonal flu shot, but they are literally fatigued with hearing about the message. How do you deal with that person?
And so a lot of the way I would deal with that person, and by the way, if I can just quickly finish the story with my niece.
Sure.
I told her, I said to her, were you aware that mRNA compounds, they've been researching them for well over 20 years now? She didn't know that. I said, and this is just a variation. So in fact, just because it came out fast doesn't mean they haven't been researching them for a really long time. And then I explained to her what the vaccine is actually doing. And then in many ways, it's safer because they're not even giving you the virus. Your body's creating spike protein. And she went, I'll take it. You know, that's what she needed. Now, for the question you're asking, a lot of my answer is going to be, who is this patient standing in front of you? So let's say it's somebody our age, right? And, you know, they're tired of all this, as you said. And now I'm their pharmacist, and I say, hey, John, it's time to get your flu shot. And you basically say to me something to the effect of, oh, man, I'm tired of all this. And I say something to the effect, it's just wearing to have to always be thinking about the next vaccine in order to be more okay. And if you wanted to even role play this, I'd role play it with you. But that's where I would start. I would first acknowledge the fact that you're tired of this and you have good reason to be. You know, I would say in so many words, I don't blame you for being tired of this. You know, you've been through a lot. You've had to have a lot of vaccinations, and the thought of another one just sounds like too much. You would shake your head and say, exactly. And I would say, you know, would you mind if I just shared a few things about the flu vaccine and you tell me what you think, with the understanding that ultimately you have to decide. It's your life. It's not mine. And at that point, I would share my concerns about somebody being our age, not getting vaccinated, in terms of the risks that we take, you know, of getting the flu, the effects it can have on our hearts and lungs because our immune system is not what it used to be. And I would say I would hate to see something like that happen to you when it could have been avoided by getting the flu shot. What are your thoughts about that? Now, you might say something like, you know, you're right. I don't want to have that happen. I'm just really worn out by this vaccine stuff. And I would say, I don't blame you. I just like to really make sure my patients are protected and take steps that they can take to protect themselves.
Yeah, unfortunately, some practitioners may basically give up on the patient once they give that first explanation and won't delve in it. But that's a wonderful explanation. So Bruce, let's talk about, you know, pharmacists. They're veteran pharmacists like myself. Mm-hmm. And they're the folks that are new graduates and just out of school. And the ones that are just out of school or the younger generation, they grew up, they in their curriculum at school, they're used to the term motivational interviewing and role playing and things like that. Veteran pharmacists like myself, and I began practicing before their computers. I'm going to date myself.
Me too.
So what's the receptivity of the motivational interviewing technique on the part of both generations? I mean, how do you deal with an older pharmacist that may say that they don't have the time or don't want to take the time that it's going to take to motivate their patients?
And let me say this, and I almost forgot to say this in the beginning. Motivational interviewing is almost a misnomer because we're not talking to them to motivate them. We're talking to them to explore their motivation. There's a big difference. If I got to try to motivate you to do something, that's a much harder task than for me to figure out what's keeping you from doing something, what would make you do it, with the understanding that it's your decision. You know, if I think my job is to motivate you, I have a really difficult job. If I think my job is to explore your motivation with you, that's a different job, you know, and I'm not going to try to push you. I do want you to move toward health. I want to influence that, but it's your decision. So here's kind of what we know. First of all, the schools, in some schools, are doing a great job of teaching motivational interviewing. In most schools, they're not. There are simply not enough bona fide experts to teach motivational interviewing. And often in the curriculum, they're only teaching 1 to 2 hours of motivational interviewing. That is not sufficient time to learn it. It's just not. And if people are wondering whether that's true, I would say, look at the research on MI. You need a minimum of 8 to 16 hours of training to get to the point where it's just conversational for you. I just recently donated our 8-hour program to AACP, the American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy, so the schools can use it to teach their students because there's just not enough expertise out there.
So how many have jumped on board with that?
Well, AACP just got it, and as you know, they have a new leader. So yep. There's about right now 15 schools that are using it, all right? They want to promote it much more robustly. And keep in mind, when I was promoting it, a lot of times people think I'm promoting it because I want to make money. And honestly, that wasn't my motivation. I have all the money I need. My motivation is I want to see people use this, pharmacists. About the older pharmacists, as you and I both know, John, there is no substitute for wisdom. Even though many pharmacists did not get trained in motivational interviewing, that doesn't mean they haven't figured out that trying to push a patient too quickly doesn't work.
Right.
You know, so just because they're an older pharmacist who hasn't had motivational interviewing also doesn't mean they haven't figured out a lot of what's there in MI.
Well, their patients trust them for a reason, and then they're probably doing motivational interviewing without really even being aware of it.
Or certainly at least important parts of it, you know, in terms of listening and honoring and those kinds of things.
But there's still some things that they can obviously learn from.
Absolutely. From that. And one of the things that, we've had thousands of people go through our program, and a lot of it really changed their understanding, because many of them did learn it in school. They learned it in a, they assigned some poor new clinician to teach motivational interviewing who really didn't understand it, him or herself either. And often it was taught poorly and not taught in sufficient way to really give them the skills they needed. And then when they learn our approach, which got rid of all these acronyms that people were using before that pharmacists and healthcare people had a hard time remembering, all of a sudden light bulbs went off and they were like, oh my gosh, not only do I get it, but I now see it doesn't have to take a lot of time. Look, if you're telling me you've only got 30 seconds to talk to a patient, it probably doesn't matter what you're using, it's not enough time, you know? But if you're telling me you've got 2 or 3 minutes to talk to a patient, the research shows that 3 minutes of motivational interviewing will get you farther than 15 minutes of traditional paternalistic education, information giving, because you're honing in on exactly what you need to address for the patient to move forward. So it teaches you to get the scope and really see this is the issue for the patient. You know, when you have a patient who says, who has high blood pressure, I don't know why I need this medicine, I feel fine. They don't need to hear a sermon on the etiology and progression of high blood pressure.
Nobody wants to be preached to.
No, well, and not only that, telling them about how high blood pressure progresses in this moment doesn't address their issue. Their issue is, I feel fine. I don't know why I need this medicine. What we have to help them understand is how they can feel fine and still be at risk. That's the barrier.
So, you know, I'm really glad to hear, I was not aware, I'm glad you mentioned it, I'm really glad to hear about the relationship with ACPE, because you hear ACPE, so much about how important it is for pharmacy graduates to know how to talk to patients, to relate to patients. And this is certainly an important tool in helping them be able to do that.
Just as an FYI, the new accreditation standards that will be coming out in a year or two are going to have MI as an accreditation requirement. I have always found it interesting, John, and not, this is not just true of pharmacy, it's healthcare. We talk about evidence-based medicine, but we don't talk about evidence-based communication. And we all think we know how to communicate. Well, we do, but the divorce rate is 53%. You know, that says something about how we're doing. Yes, we're communicating, but is it what we want to be communicating? And so MI can help us really hone those skills so that in whatever limited amount of time we have, we can be far more effective.
So what's the definition of success here? Better adherence, more people getting immunized, substance abuse problem? I mean, what's the definition of success?
To me, the definition of success is moving people closer to healthy behaviors. You know, to me, getting vaccinated is a healthy behavior. Taking your medicine is a healthy behavior. If you've got diabetes, eating healthier, getting some exercise is a healthy behavior. And so we also need to recognize, look, we had a patient that we were talking to whose parents, her father died of a heart attack. Her mother had a stroke from high cholesterol. Her total cholesterol was 400. And she said, she got a prescription for a statin and said, I don't think I need this medicine. I'm not my parents. Now, most people would respond to her with, are you kidding me? Did you not see what happened to your mom and dad? So her contention, though, was, look, I don't have high blood pressure, I'm not overweight, and I don't smoke. What I said to her was, you know, all of those things are really in your favor. May I tell you what worries me? And then I talked to her about genetics. Now, she said to me, you've given me a lot to think about, I need to go home and really give that some thought. So she, 3 weeks later, she came in to get the medicine. She did not right away. She needed to think about it. But did we move her in the right direction? Yes.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think one of the learnings here is that your communication back to her, your message would be different if it were a situation where she was worried about the side effects of the statin as right. opposed to thinking she didn't need it.
Correct. Absolutely. And that's why you've got to listen to the sense making. Is her sense making about side effects? Is her sense making about needing the medication? And why doesn't she think she needs it? She doesn't think she needs it because she's not her parents. And again, the very first words out of my mouth ought to be, you're right, you're not your parents. There are a lot of things working in your favor. May I tell you what concerns me? And she said, by the way, you can tell me what concerns you, but I still may not take the step. And I said, fair enough, it's your decision, you know? And then I told her about my worry that because she came from her mom and dad, her genetics may be like theirs. And I worry that her ability to the way her body processes LDLs may be very similar to her parents. And that I think trumps all the benefits of that she has going for her. That's what I worry about.
Right. So Bruce, I want to before we have to close out here, I want to get a plug in for the NCPA annual meeting, which is October 1st through 4th. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the session that you're going to be having there?
I'm going to be doing an hour session called When Time is Short. And it's about using motivational interviewing when time is short. And I can
which tell- Which apply to a lot of pharmacists.
Yes, absolutely. now, I would say that 90% of what I'm going to do is use case examples. Very, very short, kind of like what I was telling you here today. What did the patient do? How do you listen for sense making? How do you respond using MI? And hard hitting, everyday, real world, because these are from really real patients that they see all the time. And then give them some time to ask some questions and give them some references if they'd like to learn more.
Well, I'm going to make sure I come to that session.
Okay.
So, Bruce, you've covered a lot of ground today with motivational interviewing. Anything that you would like to touch on that we haven't covered with our questions and whatnot today?
No, you know, so, other than somebody said to me one time, do you use this with your wife? And the implication was that somehow this was a manipulation, you know? And motivational interviewing, and the answer is, of course I use it with my wife. I love my wife. She's a big girl, she's an adult, and she can make her own decisions. And so motivational interviewing respects all of that. And so it's a caring way of talking to people about behavior change. And so sure, if my wife feels stuck about something and she says, what do you think I should do? I don't tell her the answer. I explore it with her. So she comes to a decision that she feels okay about. And I do it in a very loving and caring way because I care about my wife. And that's what motivational interviewing is. And doesn't matter what the behavior is, the process is the same.
Yeah, and you know, the application is really timeless because there are always going to be substance abuse issues. There's always going to be the problem of adherence.
Yep.
And you know, vaccines and immunizations are here to stay in the pharmacy world. Thank goodness.
Yeah, and, weight loss.
There are lots of help needed in all of those areas.
Yep. People struggle with weight loss. People may or may not want to quit smoking, but all of a sudden the doctor says, I'm not doing the surgery unless you quit for at least 2 months.
Yeah.
We can help them using MI.
Yeah. Bruce, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. This has been great. I can't wait to see you in Kansas City. And thank you again for being my guest.
Oh, I appreciate you having me and look forward to seeing you and shaking your hand in Kansas City.
Sounds good. Take
care.
Kansas
City, here we come.
Thank you for listening to Move the Needle. We'll see you next time for another valuable episode surrounding immunization services.